Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast. This is 971B, brought to you, as usual, by Persona Nutrition. Thank you for downloading us. Do tell your friends about us if you like us. We have a great guest today, Dr. Gail Gross, G-R-O-S-S, How to Build Your Baby's Brain, a parenting book that's won 2 awards this year, and a great gift. We're going into the Christmas season, if you're listening to this, when we release it on 12/18. So this today should be, I think it's Tuesday, 12/18. 2019, got to keep remembering because 2020 I'm getting to write notes on now, but 2019, and How to Build Your Baby's Brain, a parent's guide to using new gene science to raise a smart, secure, and successful child. Gail Gross is the foreword, this is by Dean Ornish, who of course is a good friend. And Gail, let me ask you a couple quick questions. How did you get to do this? Did you learn while raising your own children? It looks like, I mean, by the way, on the cover, I love the cover. It's got 10 children in the front and back cover who all look like they are intensely looking and listening at something. Obviously, many ethnic groups are represented by these kids. But how did you get to do this? Did this come about from what you were studying with your own children, or what occurred here?
Well, you know, thank you for having me, Michael. And I will say that this book was about 20 years in the making, and my interests for my have always remained children and education and psychology, so children and families. And so in my first dissertation, I started on parental involvement in early education as it later affected language, cognitive, and social development, and that's when the horse went right through the gate, and I started really doing a lot of studies and research, my own research. I did 1 year pilot study in our largest school district, the HISD system, and many other studies in the HISD system. And so after about 4 or 5 studies, I felt I really had a handle on this. And 2 PhDs later, I have a doctorate in education and PhD in psychology. And so this was something that I've always been interested in, and I always stayed in the same area because I found it so profound. And now neuroscience and technology allows us to see what a lot of us just supposed in the early 60s, 70s, and 80s, which is that parental involvement is a huge part of brain development, because our old argument is that nurture or nature has been answered, and it's just about a 50-50 split. So the experiences we create, how we treat our babies, and even in utero, how we, the environment we create for our babies and the experiences after birth have a tremendous impact on which genes develop and which are suppressed. It's as if you're sitting at a huge mixing board, and you can turn on some of these genes by the environment or the experiences you create for baby, and you can suppress some of these. So you can enhance and suppress.
So, Gail, a lot of what you've done in this book is in the under 4-year-old child, if I'm correct in the way I didn't read the full book because I didn't get it till yesterday, but I read about a third of it. And it looked to me like it was in the younger children. And is that who we get to influence most, or can you influence older children as much as young children?
Well, it's 0 to 5 is really what we're talking about in this book, and that's the developing brain. And, of course, it's like learning a language. If you learn a language before the age of 10, all the neurons gather around the track of that particular language in the brain. And as a result, that track really is a part now of the brain that's very strong and very well formed. So that language that you learn before the age of 10 will be spoken like a native, as if it was your native language without an accent. But if you learn that language after the age of 10, you'll have an accent. And someone who speaks that language natively will recognize that you've learned it beautifully, but still you're not a native. And that is the difference. When you have a developing brain, the neurons and the connections, the synapses, are happening so rapidly that you actually, in the first year of life alone, you have over 1,000 trillion connections, neural connections. So you can imagine how rapid the developing brain is happening, and these connections are happening. So the way we talk to our babies, if I said to you, if you speak to your baby in complicated language instead of simple short commands, you could increase their IQ. If you knew that, you would do that. And the reason it works, and it does happen, and this is Florence Goodenow's work, is because the brain is building an association. We call it an associative mass. And so the more language, the bigger the mass. And so the more the connections. And so as a result, whatever we do to the developing brain, for good or bad, has more impact, except for anything that happens that's critical or dangerous to the brain, of course, including abuse and so forth, after those critical 5 years will still have tremendous impact. But nevertheless, as the brain is developing, we can help it form.
So let's talk a little bit about gender and sexuality development in children and how to navigate this. Do you work on this prior to age 5? Is that an important thing to infuse something about gender and sexuality development?
Well, you know, your baby is learning all about sexuality even before the age of 3, and also gender, because we're social animals. We're primates. And we are learning through imitation. So what we see, we imitate. So not only is there a natural proclivity towards a sexuality, of course, also children model what they see. And they imitate their parents. And they imitate their opposite-sex parents and their same-sex parents. So at the end of the day, a lot of what children present has to do with what they're copying, what they're imitating. Nevertheless, we do see preferences. We do see little girls reach for relationship-oriented things because girls are very oriented towards relationship. It goes back to the biological need of other women to help her survive when she was in a cave in the early days of the creation of man. She had a baby or she was pregnant. She needed those other women in the cave to be in a relationship with her, to help her give birth to that baby, to have a care and to help her feed and so forth, take care of that baby. So women and young little girls are very oriented as a result biologically towards relationship, whereas boys almost automatically reach more for competition. A little girl will go visit a little girl and say, I hope she likes me. I'll give her my best doll if she'll like me and be my friend. A little boy will say, I wonder if his toys are as good as mine. I wonder if I can beat him at such and such a game. So right away, in general, we see that there are proclivities that children reach for and that have to do with who they are biologically. Now, the environment we create affects that 50-50. So we can have a huge impact on that development by the experiences we create for our children. But generally, children learn through imitation as well.
More of You, the Owner's Manual, coming right up. But let's take a moment to talk about your health. Dr. Roizen will tell you that a common question he gets asked often is what vitamins he likes. what he recommends. Without knowing more about their needs, that question used to be almost impossible to answer. Now, however, it's easy. Go to personanutrition.com/Roizen and take your free assessment. It's a smart and easy way to get personalized supplement recommendations. The Persona Assessment is backed by the latest nutritional research and the expertise of Persona's Medical Advisory Board, which consists of 8 nutritionists, a pharmacist, and 5 medical doctors, including Dr. Michael Roizen. All the latest scientific data and nutritional research put into one supplement program personalized for you. Just take the 5-minute assessment to get your free recommendations based on your goals, lifestyle, allergies, special diets, and prescription meds. Convenient vitamin packs are delivered to your door each month. Whether you want to sleep better, have more energy, or simply stay as young as you can, go to personanutrition.com/Roizen and get 50% off your order today. Half off now at personanutrition.com/Roizen. That's R-O-I-Z-E-N.
Now, is there a key strategy for bonding with babies, and what in the same part, since I know the answer, since I read that obviously in the book, what I'd like to do is I didn't see much on, and you probably have it and I just missed it, on what you do with families where there is an early separation or an early divorce. What happens there?
Well, you know, when bonding is, of course, the key to early childhood development. A well-bonded child feels secure and has lower anxiety because they feel competent and confident when they feel loved. So we know that we can disturb that confidence and competence and good self-esteem if a child is not well bonded, if they're not loved and cuddled and cared for. And those things are so simple. You don't need a PhD or an EDD or any special classes to give a warm bath to your child and a nice massage and conversation and singing and reading to them. All these things are making the snap, crackle, and pop in the brain. And children are very possessive of their parents because until at the age of 3, a child doesn't recognize that mother or dad are not part of them. They see you as an appendage. So this is where divorce and sibling rivalry rear their ugly head. If a child sees parents as an appendage and suddenly there's a tear or a rip in that intimacy, you can see how it has a tremendous impact on the developing brain because the child feels insecure then and suddenly will overproduce cortisol, one of the stress hormones, to deal with this stress, this fear, this feeling of where's my father going, where's my mother going, where are they? And this detachment, this makes this overproduction of cortisol bathe the brain, and it changes, therefore, brain architecture and impulse control. So this happens in sibling rivalry also. When a child says, that's my mom, that's my dad, and feels this tremendous possessive feeling towards parents because, after all, they're so connected to these parents as an appendage, and suddenly somebody else that they didn't ask for or know about is sitting on their parents' knee, and so there's this jealousy that comes forward, and all of these things all this stress overproduces cortisol, and cortisol changes brain architecture and impulse control. And if it's a steady diet of stress, like a divorce, an absent father's not there regularly, or mother's not there regularly, or significant others that are primary caretakers suddenly disappear from the scene, of course, it has baby perplexed, baby frightened and insecure, and then, of course, too much cortisol is produced, and it affects the development of the brain forever. So if we're savvy parents, we recognize this will happen, and we do everything possible that we can to compensate for that separation, that too early separation, or that time away from our children.
And obviously, in military families, there is that separation. And so does technology help? In other words, does iPhone or Skyping help with the child, or has that been studied at all, Gail, or is that too early to know?
Technology of this kind, where children can reconnect to their parents, yes, that does help. And in fact, pictures of parents, pictures over a crib or pictures on a wall, that helps. Making tape recordings of your voice, talking to your children, that helps. But you have to appreciate that in our culture, we separate prematurely from our children anyway. I mean, consider this. Your child is living inside of you for 9 months, and we think of that child as a seedling, but actually they're a person. And from 4 months on, that little person is doing all kinds of things that we can see now. I call it a womb with a view. We can look into the womb and we can see what's going on. And baby's learning his mother's or her mother's language from 4 months on. This is Patricia Cole's work from Seattle. And so we know that there is a lot of development going on from utero to birth and birth on. But in our culture, after having a little roommate for 9 months, we give birth to this baby and put them in a separate room. And we, after 6 or 8 weeks, we go back to work. And all of these separations really frighten our children because they have no sense of time or space. But they do know one thing. The one person, or if a father is involved, the two people whose smell they know, whose sound they know, who is connected to them in every way, is suddenly not there. And they feel abandoned because they don't know if that parent is going to return. And this, of course, once again, overproduces cortisol, one of the stress hormones, and that changes brain development and impulse control. And if we don't compensate for time away, then we have a problem. You know, in many cultures around the world, mothers take their children with them to work. They in Africa, mother slings her baby around her breast, and so baby listens to her heartbeat all day long. And baby is going with mother everywhere she goes in this little cradle that's been created out of a scarf. And now baby's being culturized and socialized with mother and feeling very secure. And the same thing in Asia. Many mothers take their babies with them. If they're agrarian and they're working in a rice field, they may have baby on their back while they're working in the field. And the same thing in the Middle East and many cultures around the world, not our culture. The Western culture separates right away. But the best of all possible worlds would be if companies would connect with nurseries and they could have a mother or father going to work and putting baby in a nursery that's attached to their work and their company, and then they could make visits that are structured and defined throughout the day so that baby learns to realize that they haven't been he hasn't been abandoned or she hasn't been abandoned, and mom or dad will come at each break period, 10, 12, 3, and they will be reunited. And so, therefore, the stasis or the level of cortisol remains intact and doesn't overproduce because now baby has become habituated to the fact that mom or dad is going to be there and is going to be there during the day. And then, if we don't have this ideal situation, we must compensate. When we come home, we must really give quality time to our children. On the weekends, we really have to give family time. And that really means a lot of unselfish sacrifice from parents, not to jump on the telephone, not to run out to see friends, but to do things in a thoughtful, skillful way so that they give their time, the good time they have, to their children. That means more going out at night after baby has been put to sleep and doesn't realize that you're going to be gone. So that you have, and then preparing children for when you're going to leave, giving them time to get used to the idea, if it's a babysitter, time to prepare and get used to that babysitter, or if it's a nursery school, to adjust to that new nursery school. You know, children aren't, until three, aren't comfortable around other children. And they're, there's cortisol elevates hour by hour. We can test it in the saliva just from being around other children and not having their parents there. So if you said to me, what is the key to parenting? I would say bonding. Bonding is really everything. And anything that interferes with that needs to be looked at in the way of a compensation. How can we compensate for time away?
Gail, you could go on for a lot. This is a wonderful book, How to Build Your Baby's Brain. We've been talking with Dr. Gail Gross, author of The Only Way Out of It Is Through, and that's another of her books. And the foreword is by my friend Dean Ornish. A must-read for all parents is what Arianna Huffington says it is, How to Build Your Baby's Brain, A Parent's Guide to Using New Gene Science to Raise a Smart, Secure, and Successful Child. If you've got someone who you're looking for a gift for who is either pregnant, thinking about getting pregnant, or has just had a baby, this is a wonderful book to get. Dr. Gail Gross, How to Build Your Baby's Brain. And I want to thank Persona Nutrition. They are the overall sponsor of this show, You, the Owner's Manual podcast. But especially thank you for downloading us. 50,000 of you a week can't be wrong. I hope they can't. Do tell your friends about us. This is segment 9, and I want to make sure, I think it's 971B. 971B, and I want to thank Dr. Gail Gross and Luis for engineering, but especially you for downloading us. Thanks again. We'll be back next week with another News of the Week for the A segment. This week's was spectacular, by the way, as well as a B segment with another new guest. Thanks again. I also should acknowledge Donna Gould, our overall producer, for making it happen. Thanks again. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, we are releasing a show on Christmas Day, but this is a great Christmas gift to get. That is How to Build Your Baby's Brain. Thanks again.